From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
In the aftermath of President Trump's announcement that the U.S. would withdraw from the JCPOA with Iran, we take a look at how the withdrawal by the U.S. is being viewed in Tehran by Iranians. We bring you this edition of the program The Debate from Iran's press agency Press TV, hosted by Iranian journalist Kovi Tavwe.
Hello, and welcome to The Debate. I'm Kovi Tavwe. The U.S. has exited the JCPOA, the nuclear deal with Iran, and with that, the U.S. credibility, well, in many respects, has gone out of the door. Iran's leader has slammed the U.S. president's decision and threats, along with the other signatories of the deal, like France, Germany, and the U.K. Now, in this debate, we're going to take a look at the fallout from the U.S. withdrawal, how it will affect the U.S. standing in the world, and what kind of steps Iran will take, like whether or not to stay in the deal. From Vienna first, let's talk to our correspondent, Homa Lesky, who joins us. Well, today was an important day, the day after the U.S. to pull out from this historic deal, Homa. Tell us what the IAEA has said regarding the way that Iran has adhered once again to its commitments when it comes to the IAEA and its provisions.
Yes, Fabio. Well, I think the statement that came out of the International Atomic Energy Agency is important because it echoes the stance that we've been seeing from the European partners to this deal, because Mr. Amano, who's head of the agency, says in that statement that he believes the JCPOA provides a strong verification system, is in fact the most robust verification system in the world for Iran. And he said this before, that he believes a collapse of the JCPOA would be a loss in terms of verification as well as for multilateralism. Now, the sense that we're getting from Europe as of now is that they're going to stick to the deal, and from what I'm hearing, at least the European sense that we're seeing here in Vienna, and the stance that a lot of critics have taken, is that what President Trump did shows that for him, the opinions of the Europeans is not important, and he doesn't care about what they believe is the right decision. He wants to go his own way, but it remains to be seen what step Europe will take. I mean, critics here in Europe and observers are saying that the level and amount of economic relations between Europe and the United States is much more than Europe's relations in terms of economy with Iran. So will Europe actually stick to the deal and risk this tension in relations with the United States? What cost would it have? This remains to be seen. As of now, both Iran has said that as long as its interests are being satisfied, is going to stick to the deal, and the Europeans, Ms. Mogherini, as well as the three other European countries, have said that they want the deal to be in place as well. But the International Atomic Energy Agency statements, if I just conclude here, again says that it's verifying that Iran has stuck to its side of the bargain, is implementing fully its commitments underlined under the JCPOA. And another important aspect, I think, of Ms. Amano's comments, I'll just conclude here, is also the fact that the inspections that have been taking place in Iran since the implementation of the deal more than 2 years ago, and even since 2013, the IAEA says these inspections have doubled. These inspections, Mr. Amano says, have been the most robust and at the highest level that has ever happened in the world. And this, he says, is a significant gain for the international community, and in Iran's words, also shows Iran's confidence building, if we could phrase it like that. If the deal collapses, this system would also collapse.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. Homa Lesky, of course, one of the talking to us from Vienna. Let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Debate. We have from the Security Studies Program at MIT, Jim Walsh, who joins us from Boston, and also from San Francisco, from the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker joins us. Gentlemen, welcome. Jim Walsh, I'm going to start with you to follow up on what our correspondent there from Vienna said, and just on a technical standpoint, you know, the IAEA making its statement, and you as a security studies program from MIT looking at this, don't you think that then a conclusion would be that it was a mistake what Trump did, risking Iran perhaps pulling out of the deal altogether?
Yeah, I do think it was a mistake, but I'm not alone in that view. I mean, basically, Mr. Trump's previous national security advisor, his secretary of defense, his secretary of state, his new secretary of state, the Republican House chair of the House Defense Committee, they all said don't pull out, as well as all the U.S. allies, and he did it anyway. So there are a lot. He received lots of advice telling him not to do it, and he chose to ignore all that advice.
Okay, let's go on now to Richard Becker. Richard Becker, there's so many, there's so much criticism against this U.S. decision, and the Europeans now steadfast, especially in the way that the EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini came out last night and saying we are going to stick to the deal, and the U.K. has said the same, France has said the same, but the big question is, in their scramble to save the Iran deal, how are they going to be able to do that?
Well, that certainly is a question. I would make the point, first of all, that while the Trump administration and previous U.S. administrations have always invoked the quote-unquote international community when they wanted to, when they were targeting some particular country, now they're not talking about the international community because aside from Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Israel, and the United States, no one has spoken in support of the withdrawal from this agreement. But I think that we have to keep in mind that the Trump administration and its closest advisors, like John Bolton, have a very definite objective in mind, and it's not just really ending this agreement. What they're going for is regime change. It was just a week ago that John Bolton said that that is the strategy, that is the goal, is regime change. He affirmed that again, and so did Rudolph Giuliani. And so you have the U.S. pulling out of the agreement, but I think that's part of a larger strategy that they hope that that will create disappointment and discontent within Iran, particularly because many people in Iran were very hopeful in 2015, that the end of sanctions, if they were to really end, would mean a relief for Iran and for the Iranian economy, which had suffered greatly under the sanctions, which were engineered not by the Republicans, but in fact by Hillary Clinton back in 2010 when she was the Secretary of State.
Okay, I'm looking at the transcript here, Jim Walsh, of what the U.S. President said last night. And it was interesting how he says, towards the end, he's going to be there if the European allies and the other signatories are able to come up with an agreement or a deal that Iran is going to comply with to satisfy the expectations that the U.S. has. That kind of doesn't go with what our guest there said in terms of the higher aspirations, if I understood him correctly, of regime change. Or is that just a prelude for now that he's saying to keep Iran intact with this deal, given the new arrangements, if Iran even goes for it?
Well, I don't think he has a strategic view of this at all. I mean, you're right to point out the tension on the one hand saying we want a new agreement, which he did say. And by the way, when he started to ad lib, he said, well, the Iranians aren't going to want to negotiate after I've done this. And I don't blame them, I'd feel the same way. And then in the very next sentence says, but they'll have to have an agreement. And I do agree that some elements within the Trump administration have been advocates of regime change, Mr. Bolton in particular. But the president has never shown much fondness for that sort of thing. He criticized the war in Iraq. And certainly the Department of Defense has no interest in regime change. They will certainly counsel against that. But I agree that there's a basic contradiction here. And my sense of it is, again, there's not a lot of strategy. He was just determined to do this. And you'll remember that Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary for Britain, said in an interview the previous day that Plan B didn't seem very well developed, using a classic sense of British understatement. And that became apparent. He hasn't thought about what they're going to do next. There is no Plan B. There is no follow-on strategy. He just sort of blurted it out there, and now we're just going to see what happens.
Well, Richard Becker, going by what you said, Trump has come out with a couple statements today, of which some of the highlights were one, Iran better not resume its nuclear program, or else that type of sentiment relayed in one of his statements. And another one stating that Iran better come and negotiate. Kind of goes against what he said in terms of pulling out of the deal. What messages does that send? Or is off the cuff making some statements and waiting for reactions?
Well, I think that what we see there is this kind of towering colonialist rhetoric coming from Trump. And he certainly has that in unbelievable quantities within him. He speaks as an imperialist. I mean, and he feels that he can tell the world, the rest of the world, what to do. The problem, I think a fundamental problem here, is that the other parties to the agreement, to the JCPOA, may want to continue with it, and they do want to continue with it. They've made that clear. The problem that they will face, though, is if Trump implements the highest level of sanctions, as he promised in his speech, then they will end up, their corporations and banks will end up being confronted with a choice, and that is, do you want to trade with Iran or do you want to trade with the United States? So I think that's the real, a great problem. If it was not for the extraterritoriality of the sanctions regime, that would not be so much of a problem for the other big powers. But the sanctions have always been implemented with that extraterritoriality factor, meaning that the U.S. isn't just saying we're not going to trade or not allow corporations and banks to trade, U.S. corporations and banks to trade with Iran, but we're going to inflict pain in the form of billions and billions of dollars in fines on other banks and corporations from other countries if they choose to continue to do business with Iran and violate, quote-unquote, violate the U.S. sanctions.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We've reached the halfway point here. Let's take a quick time out, listen to some of the viewer comments on this, which there have been so many, and then we'll get right back to the debate.
Trump has made the U.S. isolated by the international community for the second time since the Jerusalem embassy move. Trump has withdrawn the United States from the civilized world. Who will want to make any deals with the U.S. in future? Symptoms of totalitarianism and a one-world order overriding the will of the citizens of the world. Iran should continue its nuclear program as soon as possible and as much as possible. Unfortunately, it sounds like the Trump administration is already threatening to impose sanctions on European companies that continue to do business with Iran. The deal has yet to deliver something to Iran more than cosmetic shopping. In my opinion, the West has got more from the deal than the Iranians, and yet it's them who leave the deal or ask for renegotiation.
Okay, some of the viewer comments there. During this break, Jim Walsh, I was thinking about how obviously these the Europeans, along with Russia and China, if they are true to their word, first of all, to go out on a limb and try to, come up with this agreement and at the same time not pull out of the deal. Do you think that in the short term, perhaps things may somewhat pay off, but then it's going to taper off based on, for example, sanctions that the U.S. may impose on them? Because the sanctions, obviously, is not something that the Europeans or any other countries of these signatories want to suffer from. But at the same time, doesn't that mean that the U.S. risks alienating itself even further? Because you have a U.S. president who has broken trade agreements like the climate change and other trade agreements. We could talk about NAFTA that has been broken yet all the way, etc.
Yeah, I'd say first we're in uncharted waters here, so it's hard to know what's going to happen next. I would say, secondly, what complicates this is that the sanctions are not aimed at governments, and the promises or hope in the Iran agreement in terms of sanctions relief for Iran, the main actor there are not government actors. right? It's private industry. So the governments, if it was just the governments that were involved, well, France or China or Russia could say, with authority, well, the French government or the Russian government is going to continue to sign deals with Iran. But we're not talking about governments. We're talking about private businesses. And so the French and the British and the Chinese can't force their companies, private entities, to invest in Iran if those private entities don't want to take the risk. And some of them are not going to want to take the risk. Now, I think the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese can do things to protect their companies from sanctions, to shield them from sanctions. But I think these are mostly going to be partial solutions. And really, the big political question here that you raise is, when are the Europeans going to say enough is enough? And, you know, we might be at that point. I don't know. It might be something else that is the straw that breaks the camel's back, because we've had the president withdraw from the climate change accord. He withdrew from the trade agreement, and now he's withdrawn, or violated, I should say, not withdrawn, he's violated the UN Security Council resolution establishing the Iran nuclear agreement. And at some point, the Europeans may just say, to hell with this, this guy is just too much trouble, and try to do something on their own. But that would be a big step. That would be big. I don't know if we're there yet. And so what we are right now is sort of in the messy middle.
Well, let's look at what has happened there, Richard Becker. First of all, you have the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who's over in Russia. Second of all, you've had the U.S. Come out and make a statement based on some of the news that it is going to convince its European partners not to save this deal. Again, that's a contradictory message compared to what the Trump said the night before in his statements. But it seems like they're heading towards the way that they want to just have all the signatories not comply with this. Two of the big ones, Russia and China. Do you think that the U.S. is going to have some kind of communication with those concessions that are going to be made at Iran's expense?
I think it's very possible. I think it's worth reflecting on when the sanctions, the UN sanctions, Security Council sanctions, came into being in 2010 and 2011. In her memoir, Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, who was an avid seeker of the harshest sanctions possible against Iran, the State Department directed all of its embassies in the world to find out what companies in their country, that the country they were posted to, were trading with Iran. The same thing goes for Cuba. The same thing's been going on for Cuba for 50 years, that every embassy has a person who's designated to look out for any trade with Cuba. And in regard to the trade with Iran, if that policy, if the sanctions now are inflicted on Iran in the same kind of way, where a worldwide effort is carried out to destroy the Iranian economy, because that would be the objective, I don't think they can completely succeed in that. But that's what the objective is, economic destruction, inflict as much suffering as possible, and then, you know, this age-old hope that that will cause the people to rise up because they're suffering, and that would bring about would be the key element in bringing about regime change. That's what I think we have to see as a very real possibility of what's coming. And I think that, as your other guest mentioned, there is a question: will the other NATO allies and Russia and China go along with that, or is this a moment when the world situation begins to change and the distribution of power, the overweening power of the United States, is seriously challenged?
Well, I'd like to ask you, Jim Walsh, one of the first statements coming out of... First of all, do you have a reaction? I see the look on your face. I think you have something you'd like to say. I'm sorry.
I have real skepticism about what we just heard. I don't think the Europeans are going to join some regime change strategy and impose draconian sanctions on Iran. I think the stuff about Hillary Clinton is completely irrelevant.
I didn't say that.
I think if Hillary Clinton were president, there's no way. Just let me finish, please. I listened to you for a long time. So I don't think Hillary Clinton's really relevant. If she had been president, no way she rips up the agreement. As much of a hawk as she might be, she would not have ripped up this agreement. This is about Trump. It's not about some giant systemic, you know, ideological thing. This is about this particular guy who is an outlier in almost every part of life. I mean, no one behaves the way he behaves. All the advice he got from his own advisors, maybe other than Bolton, but from his own department heads, was don't do this, and he did it anyway. So I think this is much more Trump specific, and if we had had almost any other president from any party, we wouldn't be doing this right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Richard Becker, and by the way, Jim Walsh, before I let you go and go to Richard Becker, hold on a second. Jim Walsh, do you believe what John Bolton said? He said that Trump didn't know whether he was going to pull out or not until the press conference?
I think that's entirely possible. I mean, I think he was planning to do it, but this is a president who changes his mind. Even after he announces things, he changes his mind. I think he's very mercurial. He's a very hard person to predict because he's basically a bag of emotions.
Okay. So, Richard Becker, I mentioned about Netanyahu being in Russia. One of the first things now that has come out from his visit there that he has said is that Netanyahu said that Russia understands why we have interest in Syria in terms of how they're conducting themselves. That may provide a clue as to the way Russia perhaps is going to be handling maybe Iran. I'm wondering what you think, because Russia has been pretty quiet when it comes to Israel conducting airstrikes within Syria. And of course, we've seen recently that it's in areas where you have the Iranian military advisors present.
Well, first of all, just let me say, I wasn't saying that the European governments were going to try to bring about regime change. I don't know where your other guest got that from. My point was that what the U.S. strategy of sanctions is intended to do is to create discontent inside Iran, and that would bring about regime change. And the relevance of Hillary Clinton is that when she carried out the sanctions, the inflicting of sanctions in 2010, her State Department, the same thing would be repeated. I'm not saying Hillary Clinton's going to do it because she's out of office, but the same kind of exhaustive attempt to break down trade relations, to destroy the Iranian economy would be, I think that's what's coming again. As far as Russia and Syria and Israel, you can see the danger that the Israeli attacks inside Syria, I think that the Israeli government is looking for a response from Iran to launch a bigger attack, perhaps on Iran itself. And I think that the Russians are very aware of this, and I think everyone is pretty aware that the provocations being carried out by the State of Israel are extremely dangerous and can lead, even if none of the parties are hoping for it, to a much wider war. So I think Russia, up until this point, has refrained from strongly responding to it. But, you know, it's a very dangerous situation.
We continue our coverage of the U.S. abrogation of the JCPOA with Iran, as announced earlier this week by President Donald Trump, with this from RT's Caleb Maupin.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
The agreement meant to restrict Iran's nuclear energy program, the crowning achievement of the Obama White House, has finally been terminated by the Donald.
Today's action sends a critical message. The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them.
But how much impact is this really having? Only one country, the United States, is withdrawing. And Iran doesn't seem particularly worried.
I have ordered the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to negotiate with and lobby the European countries, as well as Russia and China, and to carry out the necessary coordination with them.
Russia and China are ready to keep things going as is. So are key allies of the United States and the European Union.
The European Union is determined to preserve it. We expect the rest of the international community to continue to do its part to guarantee that it continues to be fully implemented for the sake of our own collective security. Together with the rest of the international community, we will preserve this nuclear deal.
Under the current circumstances, we call on all parties concerned to adopt a responsible attitude. China will maintain close communication with all relevant parties and stay committed to upholding and implementing the deal in an objective, impartial, and responsible way.
We're deeply concerned over the U.S. President's decision to unilaterally abandon its obligations under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action on the Iranian nuclear program and reimpose sanctions on Iran.
Now, this isn't the only global decision the Trump administration has made to be met with chirping crickets. Remember when the USA moved its embassy to Jerusalem? Other than Paraguay and Guatemala, the rest of the world was not exactly clamoring to follow suit. And remember when Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Change Accords? Well, the other 195 countries that have signed on, they frowned at Washington for a minute, and then they moved on as if nothing had happened. The accords remain exactly the same. So, once again, we've got a big drum roll and fanfare from the White House. But with the rest of the world refusing to go along, is Washington's global leadership really all it's cracked up to be?
Let's be very clear about that. Mr. Trump did not simply exit the JCPOA. He violated the U.S.'s written obligations under the term. And that is a very delicate, important point that has been raised by Mogherini and others. And this might go to, the International Court of Justice and, other legal forums, the UN Security Council.
That was RT's Caleb Maupin reporting from New York. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was in Moscow on Wednesday for the celebration of the end of World War II. RT's Neil Harvey filed this report.
Well, besides Trump, one of those most in favor of scrapping the nuclear agreement has been the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as we heard earlier, is currently in Moscow. He recently gave a rather theatrical PowerPoint presentation that decried the deal. Netanyahu has praised the U.S. president's decision.
Israel has opposed the nuclear deal from the start because we said that rather than blocking Iran's path to a bomb, the deal actually paves Iran's path to an entire arsenal of nuclear bombs.
Israeli influence is absolutely key here. Trump cited Netanyahu's kind of used cars salesman style presentation in order to justify withdrawing from the Iran deal and his new policy of rollback. And, first of all, we have to recognize Netanyahu introduced nothing new in his presentation. The intelligence was arguably fabricated that Netanyahu had introduced that Trump cited. It's another intelligence scam driving us to war.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.